Jesse Duplantis is an American preacher with a background in the Christian evangelical movement in the USA. And he sums up well the thrust of my preaching today. I quote, "As believers, we are running the race together. We are connected by our faith in God and our love for the world that he sent Christ to save. So if one gets weak, we carry them. We aren't called to stop moving forward. We aren't called to criticise each other. No, we're called to encourage each other, to reach down and carry each other and to keep moving." Powerful words. If I was to tell you today that I was going to talk about a saint, what would your response be? Oh my goodness, Noel's gone over to the other side. We need to pray for him. Now, no offence is made to the other side, but the veneration of saints is a daily occupation there. In its simplest definition, it really is just a recognition of Christians who have epitomised the Jesus model in their lives and sometimes their deaths. And saints haven't always been saints. Paul had been a persecutor of the church and was converted on the road to Damascus. John Newton, the writer of Amazing Grace, was a slave trader, just to name two. I mention all of this because this month the church celebrated the feast day of St. Barnabas on June the 11th. A man we read about in Acts, but do we really take note of who Barnabas was and the impact he's had upon the church for today? Barnabas was a man who rose above his own fears and sought to do things in the strength and guidance of God's Spirit, to be a labourer in the vineyard to bring in God's harvest. Barnabas was not born Barnabas, he was born Joseph, to wealthy Jewish parents on the Greek-speaking island of Cyprus, probably around about the time of Christ's own birth. Traditional accounts hold that his parents sent him to study in Jerusalem, where he studied at the school of Gamaliel, who also taught Paul. Later on, when Christ's public ministry began, Barnabas may have been among those who heard him preach in person. And at some point, either during Christ's ministry or after his death and resurrection, Barnabas decided to commit himself in the most radical way to the teachings he'd received. He sold the large estate he'd inherited, contributed the proceeds entirely to the new movement, and joined the other disciples in holding all of their possessions in common. Paul approached Barnabas after the miraculous events surrounding his conversion and was first introduced to Peter through Barnabas. About 5 years later, Barnabas and Paul spent a year in Antioch, building up the church community whose members were the first to go by the name of Christians. Both Paul and Barnabas received a calling from God to become the apostles to the Gentiles, the non-Jews, although the title is more often associated with Paul. Barnabas and Paul left Antioch along with Barnabas's cousin, John Mark, who would later write the gospel that bears his second name. The trio's first forays into the pagan world met with some success, but Mark became discouraged and returned to Jerusalem. The question of Mark's dedication to the mission would rise again later and cause a significant personal disagreement between Paul and Barnabas. Tradition outside the Bible describes the legend of the martyrdom of Barnabas. It relates that certain Jews coming to Syria and Salamis, where Barnabas was then preaching the gospel, being highly exasperated at his extraordinary success, fell upon him as he was disputing in the synagogue, dragged him out, and after the most inhumane tortures, stoned him to death. His kinsman, John Mark, who was a spectator of this barbarous act, privately interred his body. Although it is believed that this was his martyrdom, the apocryphal Acts of Barnabas, those are the writings that have biblical, supposedly biblical authors, but haven't been included in our Bible, states that Barnabas was bound with a rope by the neck and then dragged to the site where he would be burnt to death. These events occurred in around about 62 CE, CE being the common era, which we used to call AD. Saint Barnabas is venerated as the patron saint of Cyprus. Luke described Barnabas as a good man, full of the Holy Spirit and of faith, and he was known for his exceptional kindliness and personal sanctity and his openness to pagans. The apostles figured a good name for this guy named Joseph would be son of encouragement, that is, Barnabas. We need encouragement, don't we? Not just Christians, everyone. The negative, complaining voice seems so much louder than the happy, contented ones, though nobody came to the service this morning. It seems as if the Western world today, you just complain about politicians, about the weather, about the economy, about the dockers, about the sinfulness of the world, about the newsletter, about the songs, about the preaching. Frankly, our words reflect our attitudes. Colossians 4:6 says, "Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone." Are our words graceful and salty? That is, do our words bring hope and forgiveness and make people thirsty for God? And what are the characteristics of an encourager? How do we become an encourager, a Barnabas? George Matthew Adams, an American newspaper columnist and founder of the George Matthews Adams Newspaper Service, which syndicated comic strips and columns in newspapers for 5 decades, in 1920 published his own book. This is the title of the book. Don't think it's just 2 letters here. Up. A little book of talks on how to wake up, get up, think up, climb up, smile up, cheer up, work up, look up, help up, grow up. It was a book on encouragement. And in it, Adam says this: "There is no such thing as a self-made man. We are made up of thousands of others. Everyone who has ever done a kind deed for us or spoken one word of encouragement to us has entered into the makeup of our character and our thoughts, as well as our successes." How many of you played sports and copied your favourite sportsman? You know, how many of you bounced the ball 100 times when you watched John McEnroe do it? How many of you wore headbands like John McEnroe? How many of you threw rackets like John McEnroe? And we copy sporting stars, but we actually pick up things. There are aspects of the ministry that you'll see me entertain into during the liturgy that I picked up from other priests, where I thought, this is a really good thing to do. This is how it should be done. I wonder how much of me is actually original. How much of you is original? How much have you experienced? In 1978, Carol Walchler became the first non-Italian to hold the position of Pope. He was also the first pope from a communist country. In 1983, Pope John Paul II spoke, now be boggled by this, to 1 million young people gathered at a monastery in Jasnagora. It is noted that his speech encouraged the young so much to defy the oppression that they were under that it led to the overthrow of the communist government. Pope John Paul II explained to the young people that if they told him what they loved, he would tell them who they were. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? And he charged them to watch. He called upon the gospel narrative of Jesus, who many times called his disciples to watch. And what did John Paul mean? Keep your eyes open. Certainly he wanted the young people to see what was around them and not put their heads in the sand. But more than that, by watch, Pope John Paul II meant actually to see one another. To don't close yourself in, searching only for your own interests, your own judgments. Watch means to love your neighbour. Alice stressed this at the beginning of the service. Love your neighbour. Engage in your responsibility for your community, your state, your nation. Watch. Be a person with conscience. Call good, good. And evil, evil, and do not blur the lines. Make yourself the starting point. Demand striving towards a better you and don't expect others to do it for you or demand it of you. That's a really powerful thing. We sometimes wait for other people to point out things that are wrong in ourselves when we should be addressing those, not ignoring them. Pope John Paul stressed to the gathering that on you depends tomorrow. That's a huge charge. Everyone has interludes in their life when the spirit is daunted, the joy gauge is low, and self-confidence is missing. Causes can range from a severe loss in one's life to just a barren time when life seems rather insipid, colourless and without taste. Many of us have developed methods of bolstering our spirits through meditation, exercise, or perhaps a travel vacation, or turning up the stereo when you're feeling bad. My daughter, don't tell her this, Helen, my daughter, when she used to feel really bad, it was lie on the couch with a doona, eating chocolate and watching 10 Things I Hate About You for the 500th time. There are times in our lives when we feel overwhelmed, discouraged, and without a lot of hope. And we realise we need encouragement. God assures us through the mouth of the prophet Isaiah, "Don't be afraid, for I am with you. Don't be discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will hold you up with my victorious right hand." Encouragement is the giving of hope, courage, and confidence. The healing benefits of encouragement outweigh criticism. Rekindling hope brings light and purpose back into one's life. There is a purpose for each one of us. Go back to January and I talked about that nobody was a spare. Right? There is a purpose for all of us. Realising who we are in God's sight, that he loves us and knows our hurts as well as our joys, and that he desires to be our constant companion, is the cornerstone of rebuilding a broken part of our lives. Thomas Edison writes, "Our greatest weakness lies in giving up. The most certain way to succeed is always to try just one more time." Thank you for the lights, Thomas. Being an encourager is a rewarding lifestyle. The encourager grows in character and stature as he or she develops the art of encouraging others. It is a character of strength and courage serving as a blessing to people in the most needful time. Just as I began my address today with a quote, I'll end with one. Sandra Sweeney Silver passed into heaven peacefully on the 21st of December 2021 after injuries sustained in a fall. To say that Sandy Silver was brilliant, accomplished and an extraordinary woman would be an understatement. In addition to being an exceptionally kind, compassionate and loved by many, she was a prolific researcher and writer. She was an authority on the ancient church. Sandy had a popular blog site, earlychurchhistory.org, featuring her hundreds of articles on the early Christians, with 300,000 followers worldwide, the most frequently visited site in that field on the internet today. And she wrote this of Barnabas. Barnabas's belief in and encouragement of the unique talents of both his cousin Mark and the Apostle Paul altered in a conspicuous way the course of history. The three Christian men are a triad of redemption, forgiveness, and encouragement. Don't we as Christians wish to reflect all three qualities as we work in the harvest God calls us to share in? And Jesus gets the final words from the Message translation. Do you finally believe? In fact, you're about to make a run for it, saving your own skins and abandoning me. But I'm not abandoned. The Father is with me. I've told you all this so that trusting me, you will be unshakable and assured, deeply at peace. In this godless world, you will continue to experience difficulties, but take heart. I've conquered the world. Amen. The Lord be with you.